Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Dr. Matt Polacek, and for this show, I've flipped the script on my co-host, Alan Cardoza. We're putting him in the hot seat. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, this show will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising and protecting children today and our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, each week, we'll introduce you to talented authors, caring professionals, and new innovators in the areas of health, security, and mindfulness for your family. Our guests today are Logan Clark and our very own Alan Cardoza. Both are licensed investigators with over 30 years of experience. They've both investigated many international cases, including murder, human trafficking, major fraud, and the subject of today's show. They've traveled the world locating and returning abducted children to their custodial parents and or guardians. Logan has been profiled in a BBC documentary, has written 5 books, Newsweek magazine, and other publications and TV shows worldwide. He's spoken as an expert consultant on such shows as 60 Minutes, 48 Hours, 2020, KBC Radio, and many others. In 1997, the World Investigators Network awarded him the International Investigator of the Year in Dublin, Ireland. Alan is the past president of the World Association of Detectives, and through his investigation company, therapeutic transport company, and radio talk show, Alan's made such a positive difference in the lives of thousands of people. With the addition of a book, speaking tours, movies, and TV series, Alan is now making a positive difference in the lives of millions and millions of people. Gentlemen, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Matt, it's great to be here, and it's a little different sitting over here in the other chair.
Well, today's topic, obviously, I'm very excited about, and I'm sure our listeners are. But let's get started, Logan, with, you know, how did you just get into this business to begin with?
I was a newspaper reporter in Hawaii, and had my own column, and I was really interested in investigative reporting, and I went to a school to become a better reporter, and did so well at the detective school that it kind of wound up being my career instead of the newspaper.
And Alan, how'd you jump in here?
I think my path was a little different. I was working in the family business. I got injured. Really didn't know what to do. I was going to law school at the time and thought, well, maybe I'll become an investigator. Maybe that's what I can do to make a little bit of money while I was going to law school. And as it turned out, at 19 years old, I ended up working for the same gentleman as Logan.
And there was a story that I'd read about you, Alan, that you were doing your first job, which kind of was an eye-opening experience.
Actually, one of the first cases that I worked had to do with a runaway girl, and Walt had assigned the case to me. I was out looking for her, and when I thought that I saw her, there was a party going on, and there were girls that looked to me like they were being picked up or dropped off by their dads, and they were going into this house, and based on their age, I thought it was probably like a 15 or 16-year-old girl's birthday party. As it turned out, I followed the one that I thought was the girl I was looking for, and when they went back to a trailer and I peeked in, I saw about an older man, 40-year-old or so, having sex with her. And I realized first that it wasn't the girl I was looking for. I contacted Walt, the owner of the company, and he said, it's human trafficking. What you've stumbled onto is a place where older men are going and paying for sex with young girls.
And today, you know, we're going to discuss human trafficking, parent abduction. But for you, Logan, was there a moment kind of similar to Alan's where it was an eye-opening experience that kind of grabbed you?
Probably the when I was a newspaper columnist, the reason that I had gone to the detective school, it was a drug rehab. It was called Synanon House in the 60s and 70s, and it was probably the first famous rehab center. And there was a woman who had graduated from Synanon House in San Francisco, and she went to Hawaii and opened an organization there to clean people out, and it was actually they were dealing drugs. And I kind of, during the interview, I realized that they were actually dealing drugs out of the organization. And I just got more into it. You know, I loved it. And I got more into it and went, wow, that's really neat. And then after the school, they put me undercover at Chrysler Motor Corporation. And I fell in love with it. I became a thrill slut. Mod Squad was on, and they said, yeah, we want you to go undercover. It was on television at that time. They said, why don't you go undercover, and we'll put you in as a lot boy. We'll build a phony criminal background for you and everything. And I said, you're kidding. I was like 18 years old. And I went, really? And I said, that like Mod Squad? And they said, well, yeah, kind of like Mod Squad. And I said, great. Do I get a badge and a gun? And they said, no, you'll never get a badge and a gun. This is undercover. Last thing we'd do is give you a badge and a gun. I said, but eventually I'll get one, right? They said, yeah, long ways down the road.
I mean, we're so lucky to have, you know, two of the best detectives in the world here to talk. And the two of you guys crossed paths, it sounds, earlier through a mutual boss, or?
Yes, through Walt Swanitzer. And there's actually a great story with that. Again, as I was saying, I was this young guy that was fresh and new there. And Walt says, I want you to meet Logan. He said, he's worked for me in the past. He's been over in Southeast Asia. He's here now. I'm going to have him open up an office for us in the Valley, and I want you to work with him. So we sat in Walt's office, and he explained all the things that he wanted to do. And he told me, he said, and I just want you to know, he said, you can learn a lot from this man. I said, okay, great. I'm excited. I'm ready to go. And so we got up to leave the room, and Walt says, oh, wait, Alan, come back in the room for a minute and shut the door. So after Logan went out, Walt looks at me and he said, there's one more thing. He says, I also need to tell you, he's a crazy son of a bitch and I need you to keep an eye on him. And as it turned out, we ended up, we began working together then, and we have now for over 35 years.
That's amazing. And I don't know if everyone realizes that this isn't just, you know, in the USA. This is an international business that you guys are working in, and you're going into foreign countries. And you were actually stationed out in Asia?
Yeah, I lived out in Asia for about 10 years. I lived in the Middle East, and I lived all over the world because it was easier to operate. And, on a worldwide basis.
And are there inherent risks in foreign countries or that you guys have experienced?
Yeah, there's inherent risks, but there's also more ability to do things that the United States constricts you legally. We get a little carried away with controlling things and control and the right to privacy and everything gets. It's great. Right to privacy is good and all that, but it gets a little bit screwed up when the right to privacy supersedes criminals and their right to privacy now all of a sudden supersedes victims. And so we can do things internationally that we can't do here. Sometimes Alan and I will literally force a case to go international. We will trick somebody into leaving the country so that they go to another country so that we can do there what we can't do here. Not kill them or anything like that, but we can do things like con men who steal millions of dollars. We can get them into a foreign country, and I can steal it back from them in a foreign country. What are they going to do, call the cops? They stole it in the first place. But if I do that here, even though I'm stealing the money back, they're going to put me in jail.
Yeah, and we've had child abduction cases like that, to where the person that is run has gone to a non-Hague signatory country. And while they're in that country, things can become much more difficult on us if we're not successful. So we've actually, as Logan has said, we've conned them to go to another country, knowing that they wouldn't come back to the United States because they fear the fact that there's a warrant there. But if we can get them to go to a country that has signed the Hague Treaty and will honor the U.S. law, we've tricked them to go there. And once they've gotten there, were able to now utilize, you know, all the power of the international law to then take possession of the children and bring them back to the custodial parent.
Wow, this is fascinating. And the and why get into a business like this? I mean, it's so, to me, so difficult, so draining, and really hard to even look at.
I don't know. I don't really know what the calling is. There's something, you know, there's something that just calls you to it, I think, to solve problems, solve crimes, go after bad guys, because it is extremely draining. It makes you callous. You get a different view on the world. I don't know. I think it's a justification. I like to make an effect on people and on their lives, to do something, to actually have an effect on their lives that will last forever.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, too. I think it's part of making a difference in life. And to go back to that case you asked me about, that very first case, after working that case, I knew at that point that I wanted to make a difference, and I wanted to help people that were being exploited. And, you know, you find that in human trafficking cases, and you find that in these cases to where one parent or the other is exploiting that child for their own benefit, and in some cases to get back at the other parent. You know, there's lots of different reasons why this happens, but I think it you realize sometimes at a young age that it's a calling.
And I'm doing some, you know, background and looking at some of this stuff. It sounds like our country plays a very minimal role a lot of times when these kids do go abroad, and they're in different countries. Have you guys experienced this where you're having kind of a difficulty getting national support on levels?
Well, national and local. I mean, national, international, the laws. The police just don't handle these. It's very similar to the 1950s, 60s. And 70s, spousal abuse. When there was spousal abuse in a house in the 60s or 70s, the cops would come to the door, knock on the door, and they say, "We do not want to have to come back here. All right, you straighten this shit out right now and get it straight, or if we have to come back, there's going to be trouble." Now, if the cops are called to a domestic violence situation, someone is going to jail. Mm-hmm. When they leave that house, someone had better go to jail, or their boss will put them to the ringer. Why didn't it? And well, they need to do that now with parental abduction. Their common excuse is, well, how much danger can the child be in? He's with the mother. Mm. Well, just recently, mothers have kidnapped their own kids, killed them, starved them, stabbed them, left them in hotel rooms. And so with fathers, they can be in a lot of danger. Once a parent kidnaps a kid, the kid's in danger because mm-hmm. they're doing it for revenge. They're not doing it for the sake of the child. 1 out of 1,000 they're doing for the sake of the child. When they say they're being molested or this or that, it's 99% of the time it's bullshit.
So your red flags go up right away, even if you think it's just a pure custody case, because of the desperation of the situation?
Well, yeah. The minute you steal someone's kid, your own, half yours, whatever you want to call it, the emotions are the most volatile in the world. They're literally wearing them on their sleeve. And when the police don't do anything, the worst thing is the police don't even do a missing persons report. They go, the kid's not missing, he's with his mother, he's with his father. So he's not missing. So if you don't get a missing persons report, you got nothing. Nothing. No one will do anything. Wow. And it needs to start there. And they will tell you, the cops, they play this catch-22. They blame it on each other. And they say, well, we don't do it because the DA will never press charges for parental kidnapping. And you go to the DA and they say, well, we can't do anything. The police have to do it. Both of them are lying. Mm-hmm. Not misinformed. Both of them are just lying. They don't want to get involved. They really hate domestic situations. They hate civil situations. Anything they can do to make it go to civil court so that one of the parents or both the parents have to spend $50,000, that's what they want them to do. They don't want them to bring it to the police. So you got to get them to make a police. There's a lot of stuff you have to do. But most people call us because I deal a lot with the press. I raise hell. The only way these politicians, DAs are politicians, all of them are politicians. And the only way they will do anything is if you shame them. Literally, I go to the press. I shame them. I will go to a district attorney and say, when I go home, when I go to the I'm going to leave here. I'm going to go to the news. And your name will be on the 6 o'clock news tonight when you're home with your family eating. Your name's going to be on the news, and it's not going to be good. I promise you.
So it's pure self-preservation that normally gets people to
You have to shame them because they're politicians. All they care about is taking cases they can win. They never want a case to take a case they can't win. They don't want to set an example. So it's all about politics.
Yeah, and speaking along the lines of cases that that can be won, we do something that is rather unique, and that is if a client comes to us and says, you know, my child's been stolen, the first thing that we do is we tell them, okay, if you're going to hire us, know that the first thing that we're going to do, we're going to do a preliminary investigation, and the first thing we're going to do is to investigate you, and we're going to make sure that you're telling the truth. That weeds out some of them.
Yeah, you got to find out if they have police reports on them for spousal abuse. You know, have they beaten up their wife or the wife beaten up the husband before? You know, you got to make darn sure that they are telling you the exact truth.
So has there been experience where someone's come to you, hired you to do something, and you found out that actually they were part of the issue?
Yeah, it's called collusion. And they come to a private eye and they hire him hoping that he will somehow give them an alibi or somehow prove to them that they're not going to get caught. One guy came to me and excuse me. He hired me to first his mother was missing, and he wanted me to find her missing, and he wanted to do a television show about it and follow us with cameras. Anyway, the whole thing sounded really weird, and the mother was missing, and it was nothing but a missing mom's case. And then a hand washed up on Venice Beach. This is about 20 years ago. A hand washed up on Venice Beach, and then another hand the next day washed up on Santa Monica Beach. And they were the hands of this guy's mother. Mm. And he had killed her. He hired me to find out for two things. I think he wanted a TV show out of it. But he wanted to find out if I could trace the trail back to him.
Wow.
And if I couldn't trace it, if I was one of the best detectives around and I couldn't trace it back to him, probably the cops couldn't do it either. Unfortunate for him, I did trace it back to him quite quickly in about 2.5 weeks, traced it back to him, and I called him up and I said, hey, listen, I solved a case. I found out who killed your mom. And he said, fantastic. I said, look, I'm leaving the country and I'm going to take off at the airport. I'll tell you all about it. I've contacted the police. It's all taken care of. I said, meet me down at this restaurant by LAX. And I said, by the way, you owe me X amount of dollars. Bring cash because I'm going to use that as my travel money. Right? Your cash. So you owe me the money. And I wanted to make sure. I didn't want him to write me a check because he's going to be arrested. So I got to the restaurant, and I made him pay the bill and everything. I got the cash, had the report, and I said, I got good news and bad news. And he said, oh, what? What's that? I said, well, the good news is I found out who killed your mom. And he said, fantastic. What's the bad news? And I said, the bad news is that you did it, asshole. And I said, you see those two guys over there with suits? I said, they have badges and guns, and they want to talk to you. Thanks for paying your bill. I got a plane to catch. Bye. And I just stood up, and he goes, you son of a... And the cops came over, got him, and I believe he's still in jail. He cut her up in little pieces, his mom. For insurance, he was the black sheep of the family, as I found out investigating him.
Chances are he didn't get much of that insurance money.
No. He didn't. And he was real bummed he came and hired me. I said, well, you wanted the best.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, these are the...
How do you like me now?
These stories are made for TV, and obviously, you know, Logan, you do a lot of TV work, and you just did Crime Watch Daily, which focused a show on you and how you returned these four young children from Texas. Will you tell us a little bit about that case?
Yeah, two of them were kidnapped. They were both kidnapped out of Texas. Two of them were taken to Mexico, deep down in Mexico, to the drug cartel areas. And the other two were taken, we found, in Arkansas. And we got them back. It took me 6 months. But the man in Texas, Stephen James, he couldn't get a police report, couldn't get a missing person, couldn't get anything. And I went to the DA's And I badmouthed him so much publicly that the district attorney in Austin lost the election. This was 2 years ago. He lost the election. The new DA that came in called us up and said, hey, would you guys come here and teach us how to do this? So they just, they if they will listen to us, we can solve them. We can teach them. It's not because we're smarter than they are. It's not because they're stupid. It's just because they don't want to do what it, the simple things that could solve these things within the first 3 weeks, the first week of the kidnapping, and then it would never get to what it gets to. And I'll end with this as far as this part of the conversation. Imagine what happens when someone, the mother kidnaps the kids, takes off. The kids are gone for 6 years, 7 years, 4 years, whatever. We go and find them. We get mom arrested. They come back. Now, they hardly know their dad. They're gone when they're a year and a half, 2 years old. They don't know dad. Now they're 9 years old, right? Mom is now in jail. That's the only parent they know, and dad put her there. So they hate dad. Now mom's in jail. Their whole life is destroyed. None of that had to happen. It could have been solved within the first 3 or 4 days that the child was taken, if the law would just do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and I would say, and fortunately, on the cases that Logan handled in Texas, he got them back so quickly that those kids didn't have to go through that sort of trauma. Not that there isn't still trauma, but those cases that don't get this type of attention, unfortunately, as Logan says, the psychological effect on the children is very damaging.
Oh, yeah.
And so it sounds like what's critical is the first week or 2 weeks?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the way that the police react to it when it immediately happens. Because we have to go back. When I get called by somebody and I find out that it's been 18 months and nothing's happened, or it's been a year and nothing has happened, I have to go back to the original day that it happened, what happened and how it happened and everything. And I have to literally look for the low-hanging fruit, find it so that it's so obvious that a law was broken here and a law was broken there, no matter how minor of a law, that it forces the police. And if you bring it up publicly, if you don't bring it up publicly, they can ignore it. Can't, you know, just ignore the whole thing. If you bring it up publicly, you force them to look at, this is a broken law. Now you better do something about it. You have to. Then, I mean, but we're literally putting the case back together from day one. If the cops would just do what they're supposed to do on day one, these things would be solved within the first week, 2 weeks, done. Kids would be home.
And you think the delay is because there's not enough spotlight on it, or because there's just so much paperwork and it's so difficult to deal with these cases?
Police just don't want to. It would actually be simple. It would actually be very simple if they did deal with it. But they are so obsessed with this fact of the child is not missing. He's with the mother or he's with the father. The child's not missing, so I can't do a missing persons report. Yes, you can, because the law is very, very specific. The minute a parent calls you and their kids are with the mother or the father and they haven't been brought back from visitation for 24, 48 hours, right? And you go back, the father goes to the apartment and they've moved, the furniture is gone. That's a clue to the police department. Hey, numbskull, a crime has been committed. Do you have any idea? The furniture is no longer in the apartment. The kids haven't been to school in 3 days. Does it take a rocket scientist for you to figure out that this woman had bad intentions? Wake up.
And do you guys see any sort of patterns or parallels with regards to specific parents, dads versus moms, or is it really across the board?
Well, it's more moms that are doing it to dads, because the police react stronger if the father takes the kids than if the mother takes the kids. Why? I don't know. Go back to the 1920s. I don't know what it is. Males. You know, whatever it is, the cops just think the kids are more in danger if they're with the father than the mother. So I would say the cases we get are 70% male. The father is the victim. The father is the one that had the kids kidnapped from them.
Fascinating. there was a big case last month about the young girl in Kentucky who was kidnapped by her uncle, and it turns out that the uncle actually was the caretaker for a lot of years, and both parents had some pretty some mental health issues and some legal issues. And what I'm curious as to, with a case like this, do a lot of times you guys feel after you've saved someone, rescued them, brought them back, that you know you're sometimes uneasy about really the situation that they were in, and the parents really were maybe not good fits?
Yeah.
It's a loaded question.
Rarely. But because we check them out, because the first money I spend of the clients when they come to me is to check them out and make sure that story is true. But yeah, we've had cases where at the end of, I've actually gotten to a point where I can get the kids back. And it's happened, I can count on one hand. And we've done hundreds and hundreds of these. So I can count on one hand, but we either had the child or were ready to get the child and realized this is the wrong place. We should not bring this child back to this parent. They've lied to us. One of them was nuts. I literally stopped the entire thing for the government of Sweden. I said, we can't do this. We cannot take this child from where he is and bring him with this father. And then that time I was working for the father also. The father was crazy. We didn't figure it out for a year and a half that he was crazy. He was actually nuts.
You know, I've got a story of a case where I thought that I had made the wrong decision. And the case had gone well. We had located the mother. The father had custody. And there was a big celebration of sorts when we got back. And they invited me over. So they had family members that were invited over, but they also invited me. And so they're at the table. They were eating, and the little boy that had just been rescued keeps turning around in his little kind of high chair thing. So he's turning around, and the father looks at him and says, "Stop turning around, or I'm going to get the belt." And all of a sudden, I felt all the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, and I thought, "Oh my God, I've brought him to the wrong person," and this guy walks into another room and comes out with a belt, and I mean, my nerves were on edge, and he comes over and he takes the belt and he puts it in the thing and that keeps him from turning around in the chair. And like all of a sudden, this relief came over me of going, oh, okay, everything's fine. But you think about those things. You know, you worry about it, which again is why we, as Logan said, the first money we spend is to check them out to make sure they're telling us the truth.
Amazing. Well, we'll take a quick break, but we'll be back with Logan and Alan. And you're listening to Answers for the Family. Thank you.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Welcome back to Answers with the Family. We are here with Logan Clark and Alan Cardoza. The stories that I'm hearing today are really incredible. And I had read, Alan, about you locating a child and a non-custodial father on an Indian reservation and was fascinated. Are there reservations considering the sovereign nation, or how does this story work out?
Well, this one was very interesting because the father of the child, it was one of these children that had been conceived in a one-night stand. and the father just disappeared. And so this girl was raising the child on her own. And when the child was about 2.5 years old, this guy came back into her life and said, "I'm really sorry. I was a jerk. I'm going to do everything I can to change and to show you that I want to be in this child's life." And she was very hesitant. She ended up saying, "Okay, you know, you can spend a little bit of time with him here," while she was there. And they worked up over a period of time to where he could take the child alone for ice cream. They went for ice cream, never came back. She went to the house where he was supposedly living. It was vacant. And as it turned out, he and his mother, they worshiped the devil. And this was going to be a child that they were going to raise the way that they wanted to. The grandmother in this situation, the paternal grandmother, she would contact the mother and leave messages on her phone, just baiting her, just saying, I know that you believe in a God. Well, guess what? We're going to raise this child to believe in our God, wow. Satan. The family was just so upset over this whole thing. We did everything we could, but in one of the times in which she baited her, she said, "And you'll never find me." So anyway, as we continued, we ended up doing some creative investigations, some of which we can't discuss over the air, and we ended up locating through some records that she had been to a, even though they were not American Indians, they had been on an Indian reservation. We ended up locating them there, and what we learned was they don't have to deal with us. They're a sovereign nation. We found a 1957 law that was a full faith and credit law that says that if you go there and you present your case, they can honor the law. And so I hired an attorney in Las Vegas. The attorney happened to be the prosecutor part-time for the reservation. And we knew that ahead of time. We went out, and he said, "Okay, we're going to meet with the judge." We went out to a home. We sat on the porch and waited for the judge. The judge rode up on a horse. She got off the horse, walked over on the porch, said, "Can I get you boys some lemonade?" Got us some lemonade and sat down and said, "What can I do for you?"
Wow.
That was our hearing.
Wow.
And the way in which the attorney presented it to her was, "Your Honor, there are some people here who are not American Indians, but the woman has started dating a man who is an American Indian, and they have moved into his house. They are not supposed to be here. They have stolen this child. Here's our documents, showing that the mother has custody." And she sent over the locals. So we had guys that rode up on horses and in a four-wheel drive truck that rode up to the house. We were able to get the child, put the child in the mother's arms. We had her in a motorhome. And it was such a beautiful thing. And about 10 years later, the mom contacted us and asked to meet. And she introduced me to that boy who was now 12.5 years old. And he was just the nicest kid. And she said that she just felt the need after that time for him to meet me and to learn a little bit more about what had happened. Anyway, it was one of those times when people say, you asked a question, why do we do it?
Yeah.
That's why we do it. The smile on his face, the smile on her face of knowing that we did the right thing and that this boy is now living a very happy life.
Amazing. As you were speaking, I was thinking about, and what Logan was saying earlier, that your field, you almost operate in your own world with creativity and coming up with different ways to investigate cases. And you had mentioned, you grab the low-hanging fruit, but I imagine it gets a lot more elaborate than that. Is there specific times where you had to get really creative, similar to what Alan was saying?
Oh, God, yes. Well, you always do, kind of. When I say the low-hanging fruit, the low-hanging fruit is to find a minor crime that they've done. For an example, if you kidnap a child in one state and you happen to come through California and on your way to Arizona, okay, once I find that out in your travels, I know that California laws are better and easier than other states. Mm. And if you even pass through this state with a kidnapped child or with a stolen truck, you've now committed a crime in the state of California. Mm. So I'll go to the state of California and get a crime posted there, or I'll find something they did. I literally had one guy in Costa Rica. I was working with the police department here, and I got this guy to spit on the street. Literally, I knew he spit on the street all the time, mm-hmm. and I had him picked up and arrested for spitting on the street and just stopped. They could only hold him for a couple of hours. But when they stopped him on the street, when he took his son shopping, he had taken the kid to his uncle's house, which was one of the biggest drug dealers in Costa Rica. Had glass and barbed wire around the house and a 14-foot wall. There's no way we're going in there to grab the kid.
Right.
I said, we got to get him out. And we just watched and followed, and he took the kid shopping all the time. So I bribed some cops, got him to stop this guy and arrest him for spitting on the street. And literally while they were doing it, we pulled up in a van right behind him and grabbed the boy right off the street.
Wow.
And raced to the border. And they were calling us in the car, saying, we can't hold him much longer. Where are you? I said, I'm almost to the border. You know, hang on to him. Just hang on to him. But you have to do really creative things sometimes. I've done some things. I've called in fires next door.
Some are for the air, some are not for the air, is what you're saying.
But you get very creative. You have to.
And, you know, one of the questions that we get asked quite often is that, you know, are we doing something that is making it more difficult on this child? Because we've had people say, well, but you're stealing them back. Is that another trauma? And because we are focused on those things, we either have either the parent, the custodial parent is in the vehicle, or we have a video. So if it's too dangerous to have the parent there, we'll have a video there so that as soon as they get in that vehicle, there's a video that has that parent saying, I love you. These people are with me. These people are bringing you to me. You know, do everything you can. You know, it really is one of the things to where we're conscious of the fact that they've gone through trauma, and the last thing that we want to do is add to that.
And usually they're small children, and when they're two, I don't care if they're 1 year old or two, three, four, whatever, bring the mother's sweater.
Yes.
That she always wore when she was carrying the baby.
So it's a transitional object, basically.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we literally put that sweater in the child's face instantly. And the smell immediately lets them, it's their mother.
Right.
And they calm instantly.
Amazing.
And it makes a huge difference because it's only that 5 minutes, 10 minutes trauma between us grabbing them and them seeing the next face they see, either on video or in person, is their relative, one of their relatives. It could be the brother, could be anything, you know, or they'll be in the border state, you know, that's the closest one that we can get to, and we'll have them there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and part of the reason for that, as far as them being in a border state or a border country, is if you have somebody that has taken the child and they've gone where they have some juice, like Logan was talking about, like with the Costa Rica case, if they have some juice, we have to worry about the fact that they're looking for our client's passport. They're not looking for ours. So we can be in there, but we'll tell the client, you need to stay back here because they may have flagged your passport, and as soon as you come through, they're going to take off. And before, you know, now they're gone again, and we're starting back to square one.
And a lot of these countries that you're going into obviously are connected way up, and so there's
exactly.
a lot of inherent dangers.
Exactly.
Wow. We have a listener question. Thank you, listeners, for writing. It says, according to a report prepared by Family Violence Prevention Fund, in violent homicides involving husbands and wives, about 75% of the victims were killed as they attempted to leave the relationship or after the relationship they had ended. My understanding is that a sizable percentage of individuals who disappear with their children did so because of their inability to ensure their safety and that of their children from the other spouse. What are your guys' thoughts about a parent who believes this is his or her only option?
It's used the vast, vast majority. They're doing it not because they feel this is... You're insinuating that they're doing this as the last resource to protect their child. right? That's what you're assuming. Okay.
That's what the listener is.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what the listener
is. Listener's assuming.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Matt, you're not getting out of here alive.
Okay, so my answer is the vast, vast majority are not doing it because it's their last resort to protect the child. They're doing it because it is their last resort to maintain custody of the child. They do not want split custody, and or they're going to lose even visitation because they are such a bad parent and they have had so much trouble that their visitation may be supervised visitation. Once it's supervised visitation, that's usually enough to put a parent over the edge and say, nobody is going to supervise my right. visitations with my kid. I'm taking the kid. If I can't have her alone, you can't have her alone. Nobody can have the child alone. So, and if you get to certain nationalities, and I won't get into the nationalities, but certain nationalities will, it's better to kill the child to them for their beliefs, their religion. The child's better off dead than not being with that parent solely, only. And the vast majority of them are. I know they desperately want everybody to think that this was my only. And you know what I've also found, and we found in 40 years of doing this work, okay, when we get close to catching them, or I've got them, right, got them in cuffs, got them, and I've just broken the door open in the building, they go, they throw what I call a Hail Mary pass. And the Hail Mary pass is always the same. It's, Mr. Clark, let me tell you why I really kidnapped these kids. You know what's coming? Yeah, we all do. Because they were being molested by my husband.
Right.
That's the Hail Mary pass, which is the most disgusting, the most vicious, vile thing that they could possibly do. Because the minute they say that, all of the protectors come in. All of those people, the Underground Railroad comes in that used to get the slaves out. It still operates to this day with women who kidnap their children. It doesn't operate for fathers who kidnap their children, but for women it does. There's hotels that will hide them. There are organizations that will spend thousands. I had a church try to negotiate bribery, extortion money, for a mother, on behalf of the mother. She was part of this radical church, and the priest, whatever you call them, they shouldn't even be called priests or pastors or anything else. The cult leader,
right.
Yeah, the cult leader. it's absurd. But the vast majority of these are all revenge, ego, possession. That's what it's all about.
And desperate parents call for desperate action.
Absolutely. And desperation, I wrote this in one of my books, desperation gives birth to ludicrous optimism. And you think anything. When you're desperate, you think anything will work.
To me, I know, and a lot of listeners are probably thinking the same thing, and I'm not going to ask you guys to give up, you know, all your secrets as how you find these people, but can you maybe share some thoughts and some things parents who suspect their mate is considering this and how they can maybe possibly prevent it, or, you know, what does help in these situations?
Waterboarding.
I'm going to stay on your guys' good side.
Wow. You gotta be kind of like your own detective. If you're getting ready to get into a divorce, if you're getting into a custody battle, I strongly suggest you start watching the phone calls. If these people didn't call their family before, and especially if you're married to a foreigner, and then nothing against being married to a foreigner from another country, that's great. But if he doesn't talk to his relatives all the time, and you don't know them, and all of a sudden he or she starts calling them, you need to be very concerned, very worried. You need to check the passports. And for an example, most countries, if you're married to an Australian, anybody, okay, Middle Eastern, they can go to their embassy and get those children's passports and they will give them to them. If you take the children's passwords away, right, hide them, lock them up, then they can take the child, go right back to their Middle Eastern embassy, their Japanese embassy, and they'll give them a passport to leave the country.
Wow.
So you have to put a notice. You got to get a notice out. You got to get a judge. You got to, I mean, it's just, wow. It's ridiculous. But you have, there are certain things you can do. There's just too many to list, but you got to start being self-aware and watch what they're doing.
Yeah, and keep track of, you know, of if they get a new phone. You know, why did, you know, why did they get a new phone? Mm-hmm. You know, if know where their relatives are. We have people that'll say, you know, well, they took, okay, well, you think they went to the relatives. Where do they live? I don't know. They're in this country. Okay, you never narrowed that down.
Yeah.
You know, but keep track of phone bills, like on your own phone bills. If they're calling these people and it's on a phone bill, let's say you pay the phone bill, which that can be another thing that can be a red flag. All of a sudden, they don't want you paying any of the bills anymore. They're controlling all the money.
They say, oh, the office. Now I have to get my phone from the office, and it goes to the office bill. The company wants me to do that. Bingo, red flag.
Yeah. And it might be that it makes sense for the company to do that, but still document that.
Right.
You know, find out who they've been in contact with. And that's the whole thing is that from our standpoint, they're going to get in contact with somebody. Somebody is going to help them. Know who that is. Know who they would go to. Know who, you know, if their parents, you know, have just moved from one country to another, and all of a sudden there's a lot of interest in going there. I think another issue is that you start traveling to that country, and your spouse starts saying, you know what, let's leave the kids here for summer. You know, let's let them get to know the grandparents and so on. Okay, this isn't a good thing if your marriage is on the rocks anyway.
Yeah, seed planting, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So just be, you know, be alert. Be, as Logan said, you know, be your own investigator. Doesn't mean be paranoid, but make sure that you know what's going on in your life.
Yeah, it sounds also like just big changes in behavior.
Yeah.
Another red flag. So we have another listener question here. Abduction of children by their parents is a complex problem. A social worker by profession in recent years, I have been required to become more knowledgeable of this problem to identify the warning signs so that I can help diminish the likelihood of such an event. I look forward to your show and learning more about what you do and how you do it.
Well, first, thank you. I appreciate the, you know, the fact that you want to get more information on this subject. You know, anybody that's out there, if you're a social worker, if you're working in law enforcement, call us. You know, go to our website, get in touch with us. We will give you whatever help that we can, you know, to be able to learn more about this. Because those of you that are working in a government job, you know, we want you to care. We want you to have as much knowledge as you can. Because again, what Logan brought up earlier is one of the biggest problems that parents have is the fact that government people are not getting involved. So, you know, we applaud you and we're glad that that you're doing what you can.
And the website is, our company is Global Pursuit Investigations. And they can find that, the website is gp-pi.com. But you can also find it by just looking up Logan Clark. Clark has an E, C-L-A-R-K-E. On the end of it. So if you just look up my name, if you just look up Global Pursuit Investigations, you'll find it.
Right. And if you just, again, if you go to the Answers for the Family site, we will have all of that on there as well.
Excellent. And I want to thank both you gentlemen. Today was incredible. Very interesting, exciting stuff. I'd say made for TV, but you guys are, that's literally what's going on.
Well, they're making a movie. They're making a movie. The guys that wrote The Fighter. With Mark Wahlberg, they wrote The Fighter and they wrote Boston Strong. They're writing a movie based on my life and how I got started in it and stuff.
It
should be fun.
It's awesome. Anyways, for those who have missed or want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives or past interviews at answersforthefamily.com or check us out and subscribe to the show on iTunes. And the next time you're on Facebook and Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and check some of our latest posts. And if you like them, please like us and spread the word. Gentlemen, thank you guys so much again for coming on.
It was great.
And right. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.